tuned into Quick Charge, the high voltage podcast bringing you the top stories in electric vehicles and sustainable energy daily. And it's all powered by Electrek. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Quick Charge. I'm your host, Joe Boris, and it's September 11th, 2024. Today, of course, is the anniversary of one of the most terrifying terrorist attacks to ever happen on U.S. soil, the September 11th attacks in New York. So obviously we want to be respectful of that, but it's also a day that a lot of Americans woke up reeling from what was an absolutely bananas presidential debate last night. So we're not going to get into that quite yet. However, it's worth noting here that 78% of Trump supporters do support Biden's clean energy incentives. That's a policy that cuts across party lines and something that theoretically at least 8 out of 10 of us should be able to agree to. Nearly 9 in 10 Americans, in fact, support clean energy initiatives in the Biden administration's IRA, according to new polling released today by Global Strategy Group, GSG, Northstar, and the Solar Energy Industry Association, SEIA. 1,000 registered voters across the U.S. were surveyed between August 1st and August 8th, 2024. Notably, 78% of 2020 Trump voters support federal clean energy tax credits, and only 10% of 2020 Trump voters strongly oppose IRA policies. There's not an appetite among Republican-based voters, in other words, for Congress to repeal the IRA provisions. Quote, "Every American wants lower electricity prices and greater energy security, and that's precisely what federal clean energy policies are delivering," said SEIA President and CEO Abigail Ross Hopper. "Politicians may talk and bluster as the election approaches, but the polling is clear, and a savvy lawmaker will not undermine the millions and billions of dollars in clean energy investments that are flowing into their states and districts." The story goes on to say that more than half of the people surveyed are thinking about getting rooftop solar. New data from the U.S. Treasury Department shows that in 2023, over 750,000 households claimed residential rooftop solar tax credits, and nearly 50,000 claimed tax credits for home battery storage. States like Nevada and Arizona, key election battlegrounds, are seeing some of the highest rates of rooftop solar adoption thanks to the IRA. Andrew Bauman, partner at research firm Global Strategy Group, said, quote, "The clean energy incentives passed as part of the IRA are wildly popular, including with Trump-supporting Republicans and politicians from either party who want to repeal those initiatives are putting themselves at great political risk." Now, it's really hard to say after a debate like that what counts as political risk. And that plays into what I was saying yesterday in my Quick Charge episode that talked about fractions, percentages, how math is hard, and basically summed up why, even though percentages are getting lower from what we've seen in the recent past, especially in headlines from conservative and oil-loving papers and publications, the fact remains that EV sales are up, EV market share is growing, and there's really nothing that a headline can do to stop that. So my guest today was initially going to be James Carter. He's a good friend of mine. He's an analyst, and he first came to the attention of Electrek, I think, in this post back in March. This was Chevrolet's concept showing what a hydrogen pickup might look like and why it should end the conversation. And James had an excellent satirical interview with one of the GM engineers that, of course, didn't happen. It was totally fictional, and I fell for it completely. And the conversation that James and I were going to have today was going to be one about satire. And the idea, again, was to discuss where the line was between satire and reality. And then we had the presidential debate, and the memes haven't stopped coming. So it really does beg the question, where is the line when you have a presidential candidate shouting to an empty room about immigrants eating pets in Ohio? You really have to question if any of this makes sense at all. So with that, my good friend James Carter, he's the principal analyst and consultant at Vision Mobility. He's an industry veteran with more than 20 years at Toyota. So I want to welcome James here on the show. And here's a recording from this morning that obviously we had a really good time with.
I particularly love our conversation that we had at ACT regarding that Chevrolet. That was the highlight of my month.
That was the highlight of my month. So as you can already tell, if you're watching this, I'm well into a conversation with my good friend, James Carter. He's the principal consultant of Vision Mobility. He's got a long history in the automotive industry, and he's a very well-respected, I think journalist is a strong word. He's a very well-respected commenter on other people's journalism.
Analyst, maybe. Yes,
I think analyst. Yeah, but James, super, super knowledgeable. And what we're referring to, I'll put this in the show notes, is an article that James posted to LinkedIn that I took as literal fact about a GM hydrogen concept car. And it was just so laughable because, honestly, James posted it as satire, but satire, especially in the world of hydrogen vehicles and the journalism kind of surrounding EVs, has become indistinguishable from reality. And I say this less than really 24 hours after a former president stood on national TV and said that Haitians were eating dogs in Ohio. So like, where is the line anymore, James?
That is a good question. I mean, that particular release by GM when they said, hey, our hydrogen truck, it's massive. And the, you know, the article I wrote talked about, you know, it leaving a 3-foot bed. And I remember you saying that when you wrote about it, GM took offense at that 3-foot bed.
They said it actually didn't have a bed. It was a utility.
That's right. Which made it even more ridiculous.
Well, and that's just really it, right? Like if you look at, let's look at the Nikola BEV, right? Which is the Nikola Tre. They have a full sleeper body, the full sleeper bodywork, but the whole backside of it is filled up with these 4 hydrogen tanks. And I understand the argument where everybody says, wow, you know, it's hydrogen. You can fill it up just as quickly as gas. That's not true because the way that natural gases expand, the rapid expansion, decompression, and compression, again, when you take something from a pressurized tank and put it into an empty tank, means that only about 75% of it gets filled up. Then you have to wait for it to cool down, and then you have to slow fill it to get to 100. Now you're at 40 minutes. Well, now you're slower than an EV.
That's right. It just doesn't make sense. And who thought it was a good idea that like a round cylindrical cell will make a great packaging device?
Man, I mean, there's a great company, and they actually are a really solid company. They're called Hexagon Purus. And they are tremendously leading edge. They are like way ahead of a lot of people in a lot of ways. But when I first heard about them, I made the assumption, oh, they come up with a hexagonal storage system that's much more space efficient than this stupid round tube. And I don't think that's the case.
No, I don't think so. I think it's just a name.
They left like the easy win on the table there. But
But my favorite is the Mirai. Like, you know, the Mirai is a big car. It's Tesla Model S size. People compare it to a Tesla Model S, roughly, you know, sure. Same price, same size. But you jump in that thing is like Yaris interior. So, you know, it's kind of a reverse TARDIS.
Smaller on the right. No, I get it. That's a Doctor Who reference. Yeah, for everybody really who doesn't get that. Man, what a sad, lonely life you do lead.
Exactly. So, you know, Toyota's sort of been famous for kind of, you know, being pretty smart about that packaging. Like, you know, some of the cars that I grew up with Toyota, particularly something like a Yaris and others around, you know, they were good. They were efficient vehicles, you know, that used their space well. Mirai,
No.
Nope.
Well, I don't think that's fair because it has to hold all this hydrogen. Right. So like maybe if your primary concern is how are you going to store the hydrogen, maybe that's a great solution. I don't know.
I think it's the only solution.
It's the only solution. Well, all right. We're going to have way too much fun on this episode. And for those of you watching it, if you're not enjoying yourself, just stop now. Go to the next one. This is how this one's going to go. Just cope. Your company, Vision Mobility, where you're the principal consultant, right? Mm-hmm. What do you guys do? Give us the elevator pitch on Vision Mobility.
Okay, elevator pitch. So I guess winding back just a bit more, my background is 20 years with Toyota, as you probably well know. I write a lot about Toyota, which I think most people know. But my role there was, I think I had 11 different jobs in 20 years, but most of it around sales and marketing, lots and lots of product planning probably 12 years, out with dealers, out doing a bunch of other jobs, sales planning, economic forecasting, all that type of stuff that happens in operational side for OEMs. I left in 2015 to really go and work out on my own and you know, with the people that I know and really figure out what the future of mobility is. So, you know, really it was in the world of EVs, it was relatively early, certainly not the earliest, but it was somewhat early. A lot of the work is consulting. So I did go back working in future mobility as a consultant for OEMs, as well as startups, as well as aftermarket, in a light of what their contribution to future mobility is.
Well, and I think it's really critical because you're talking about doing sales and marketing and projections about the future of mobility, really in the heyday of Toyota's Prius, right? Which is when Toyota was seen as the big market leader, right, as the most advanced company. And I don't know that they still hold that position, certainly not in terms of millennials and, you know, Gen Z and all that.
Yeah, definitely involved. You know, it's funny, actually going back to that, I had one of the first generation two Priuses that came to Australia. I'm Australian by background and was working for Toyota Australia. And
we forgive you.
That's right. And I cannot tell you how much attention this generation two Prius got back in late 2003. Holy crap. People would stop me, you know, at gas stations. People would stop me everywhere and ask about the car. It was insane. And, you know, I think that car was really critical at establishing Toyota's street cred as a company that has gone from reliable to really environmentally friendly and really pushing the boundaries in terms of reducing fuel consumption. And they did a fantastic job. The car was great. And they went on to add a whole bunch of other hybrids as we went on. And, you know, it was really easy when you're talking to your friends and family and say, hey, look, this company, they're known for their reliability. You know, you've all got friends out there with 500,000 miles on their Toyota whatevers. Now we're offering hybrids that are just as reliable and they're going to be fantastic. And they were. And, you know, you could see them roll out right across the range. Skip forward to roughly around when I left, which was 2015. 2015 was a really interesting year because, you know, Toyota really had got going with their hybrids and they were doing very well out in the marketplace. They probably had 50, 60% hybrid share. But then something really big happened, and that was Volkswagen. Volkswagen and Dieselgate happened, and it was nuts. And so all of that, anything else that was kind of environmentally friendly, because Volkswagen pushed this, you know, that clean diesel thing, they went, oh, no, we're not touching this diesel thing. And, you know, it really helped. When you go back to that, you really only had three or four EVs out there, and they're all, you know, this sort of volume, you know.
Yeah, it was a niche market.
It was really niche. And, you know, I was watching Tesla Model S, and I remember saying to my management back, I don't know, 2013, 2014, I said, do you realize that Model S has become the top selling vehicle in the larger luxury sedan market? And they go, this can't be possible. And sure enough, it was. But, you know, it was just like, you know, and then you just started to hear some internal things about hydrogen and whatever, but really, really early. Fast forward a little bit, you know, I left Toyota. I started to go out on my own, still not a lot of EVs. And then, you know, 2017, 18, 19, that's when Model 3 came. And, you know, the world completely changed in terms of EV. You know, that was really, I think, a defining moment. And so it's been really exciting over that period just to watch it go, whoa, so off it's gone.
Yeah.
So that's been
really cool. I think that's a really good point, because Model 3 was very much a normal car. If you were driving a sedan, it was very much like a sedan that you were driving, even though the price point that it was. When you look at the Nissan Leaf, if you looked at even the Chevy Bolt, if you looked at the original Honda Insight, they were all efficiency plays. They were all smaller than what people were used to. They were asking people to make a compromise and or at least a behavior change in the way that they lived and worked. And the Tesla really didn't do that. It just kind of told them, hey, you're going to get your fuel over here now in the form of electrons instead of over here. And that was really the only compromise it asked. It was even fast, fun to drive, all that good stuff. As you consult these OEMs, as you look at the marketplace and they come to you to ask you for your analysis and ask you for your experience, how does that idea of behavioral change, of asking the client to compromise, How does that play into the advice that you give your clients?
Yeah, actually, that's really interesting because, you know, I've done a whole bunch of work on consumer experience for different OEMs in this space. And shout out to my friend and colleague, Dave Fish, who works actually in all places, Arkansas, at Curiosity CX. And we've worked together quite a bit on this. But, you know, it's really interesting to see what happens, because when we started to measure the consumer experience between of those who owned an electric vehicle, you started to see this camp go like this. There was Tesla on one side, and then there was everyone else on the other. And, right. Basically, it was around Tesla establishing a vehicle that was not just a good vehicle, not just an electric vehicle, but was part of an ecosystem. It had the supercharging network. You could drive places. You could do cross countries. There was really no compromise in how you drove that. And we saw the data clearly come out of that. People treated their Teslas just like any other gas car. On the flip side, and I know this is starting to change a little bit now, but even that 4 or 5 years, we saw everyone else really in a compromised position. People would rarely take their vehicle beyond, you know, the range of their vehicle. They'd always go out and back and charge at home, out and back, charge at home, never do road trips. Like, and if they did do a road trips, holy shit, would you hear the stories? And that was bad.
Well, I mean, especially if you look at a product like the original Kia Soul EV or the Nissan Leaf that uses that CHAdeMO charger. You know, it's funny because the Nissan Leaf is actually a very forward-thinking product. It had V2G years before anybody else was talking about it. It had DC charging, again, years before anybody else on the market with the, even with Tesla, right? Because the Nissan was several years ahead of the Model 3. But they have stuck to this, I don't want to say antiquated, but they've stuck to this, what I will say is proprietary charging standard that everybody else has abandoned. And I really don't understand how they're selling any cars today.
Well, I mean, absolutely, you know, CHAdeMO's dead. And, you know, it's going to be just a matter of time before the Leaf gets pulled and, you know, they go towards the NACS system. And I'm sure that'll happen with really the only other player being Mitsubishi and their plug-in hybrid out there. But, you know, you're absolutely right. But a lot of those criticisms really applied to CCS charging just as much as they did CHAdeMO. It was just that there was a few more charges, but they were just as unreliable. And really, you know, that became a real barrier for people. And I totally understand why. You saw Farley comment a couple of years back going, holy crap, this is really shit. You know, you can't do this.
So that's the customer experience on that side of it. And I'm glad we're talking about Ford, because this is a really good segue into this next thing that I wanted to touch on. When Farley went on that road trip, the Lightning was in hot demand, right? Mm-hmm. And the Ford E-Transit still is. The Lightning has cooled somewhat, but there was that peak of like, we're going to buy these, we're going to work on these, this is going to be the thing. And he came out and made those negative comments on what was then called Twitter. When you're a Ford dealer sitting on an inventory of 25 Lightnings and the CEO of your company is out there in public talking about what a terrible charging experience it is, saying, hey guys, wait to buy one of these because in a year and a half, they're going to be able to go to Tesla charging. Do you like kind of freak out and go, why are you doing this to us? You're supposed to be helping us sell these.
Yeah, but you know, you got to face reality sometimes too. And, you know, obviously it's not helpful to move those stock.
James, you're a marketer. We don't do reality in marketing. What are you talking about?
That's true. And, you know, as I was writing about this on LinkedIn, I had this charging company come back and you said, you know, you shouldn't really be saying these things because, you know, you're spoiling EV for everyone else. And I was like, no, you got to face reality, because if people come into it, their expectations of what they went into, and this going back to our CX experience, and we got to be honest about with ourselves that this has got to improve.
I think that makes sense, because if you're setting the expectation and you're letting people go on that journey fully informed, they're going to be much more willing to embrace that. And I think one of the things that Tesla did that was so successful early on was it painted this picture that if you were buying a Tesla, you were a tech forward, early adopter, you're going on an adventure with this cool futuristic car, everybody else is a troglodyte, everybody else is a Luddite idiot, and you're going to show them. And, you know, yeah, you may have to deal with some struggles, but you can do 12-second quarter miles on street tires and nobody else can touch you. So I think that that's very fair. When you look at a scenario today with companies like Hyundai and Kia, you look at companies like Ford and GM that are established players that have been selling people sometimes 3, 4, 5 cars in a row, you're used to a certain experience, which is that you get in it every day, it does the thing that you want it to do, and it works, and there's no change there. When you're transitioning that customer from an experience they know and an experience that you don't own, right? Because you don't own the fueling experience, and you're transitioning them into an electric vehicle, and now you have to take ownership of how are they going to find charging? How are they going to navigate that? How is it going to report, you know, range estimates and things like that? Do you find that some manufacturers are better than others at setting those expectations? And how does that reflect in terms of customer loyalty for that vehicle that they buy after the EV?
Well, you know, going back to what we were talking before, there's a massive difference between Tesla loyalty and, you know, regardless of what Musk says and regardless of what Musk does, there is still a lot more Tesla loyalty in EV land than there is everyone else. And that really goes back to, you know, what you were talking about. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One, you know, I think it really starts with, you know, when someone goes to the dealer, more often than not, they're going to have a bad experience because they simply don't. Often you hear salespeople, they just don't know. They don't know about EV. They don't know how to compare. They don't know what the customer needs to do. So there is a bad experience there. So that's the first part. When they do decide, okay, I am going to go with that car, they buy it and then start, you know, treating it as if it was a gas car, then they start running into trouble. And, you know, we just don't see that with Teslas as much, at least.
Well, so but that's like the Ryder report, which has now become sort of infamous in the fleet management space, where they came out with their report and said, well, you know, we didn't experience fuel savings. We experienced all this higher costs and everything associated with these medium duty fleets. And everybody who took a look at that data and really did a deep dive into it just said, why are you using this truck this way? This is totally wrong. And you can tell that like the authors of that really had no idea. And their whole plan was, we're just going to buy these EVs and use them the same way we use diesel and it's going to be fine. And it's like,
No. Especially in that land. You know, if you want to have a look at good data for that segment, you really want to go and look at what Geotab's done, because they've got, I don't know, 10,000 whatever vehicles out there, and they have a much better place of how these vehicles are used and why they're being used. And I'm kind of surprised that Ryder didn't actually go and chat to them and say, hey, you know, what are you finding with your customers? Because the story is very different.
I think that's a fair point. And you look at companies that do have data, that do have a long history of telematics and analysis and have analysts on staff. You look at Pitt, Ohio, you look at YMX, you look at companies, you know, 3PLs like Martin Brower or Enride out in the West Coast. And they're all coming back with stories saying, look, this, some of these pencil out and come out ahead of diesel without incentives. DHL is transitioning its entire fleet of terminal tractors to electric, and they're not collecting incentives on those because they're not on-road vehicles. They're simply saying the uptime is better, the reliability is better, the wear and tear is there, and they're better for the job. So I think that that's definitely there. I know we're coming to the end of our time commitment here. I want to be respectful of that, but I also want to give you the opportunity here to say, look, I'm James Carter. This is what I'm doing. You got to come call me and I'll look at your numbers and tell you what they mean. So why don't you do that and tell people how to find you and how to follow up with you?
Yeah. So yeah, thanks, Joe. No, I appreciate the time here today. Really the first place that people should do is connect with me on LinkedIn. And really I try to build up, you know, my followers and really build up the knowledge for people that's out there. And really that's really critical in this space right now, because we just talked about that. This is a knowledge problem and we really need to get that out there. So really I concentrate on writing on that and really starting to ask some tough questions about what's out there. I also, on a consulting side, help with customer experience. I also help with startup companies and giving them some guidance and follow up, mostly in the EV landscape. So that's what I do. Roughly, you know, it's a 50-50 split between that. But
And finally, I do want to say, you know, you and I are friends. We're probably friends for a reason. So everybody here listening to that, you know, I'm going to be extremely biased and positive of everything James says. But despite his obvious flaws of being both an Australian and a Canadian, I do want to invite you to call that fat orange idiot running for president a fat orange idiot on TV. So,
well, yeah, like fat orange idiot. And I, just as we did before we came up, I brought my cat and I declared myself a married cat man in line with the Swifties out there. I really want to, you know, get that across.
So, okay. So I'm glad we brought this up because I feel like I'm very excited, and I think the Taylor Swift endorsement is an important cultural touchstone, but as a member of Generation X, I feel like I'm not allowed to get excited about this until Madonna endorses.
That's true. Well, I have an excuse. I have my daughter is a Swiftie, so I must support my daughter by being Perfect. A married cat man.
All right, that was James Carter. James, of course, always a pleasure to have guests on the show. If there's someone from the EV industry, from the world of the automotive news that you want to have featured on the show, please let us know in the comments. We'll do everything we can to get them onto the show. But I want to say in closing, I think that nobody said anything particularly negative about Elon Musk. And that took a ton of willpower when the guy is actively tweeting nonsense like this. So I don't know, guys. If this is your guy, you really gotta question it. But hey, we don't have to question it because this isn't a show about Elon Musk. It's a show about EVs. And Elon's EVs, Teslas, are actually super interesting, and they're becoming even more interesting by the day. So today, Tesla revealed a modular, unboxed EV manufacturing process in a patent. Now, obviously, this was first shown at the Investor Day earlier last year and was supposed to enable a $25,000 Tesla by dramatically reducing the cost involved in manufacturing a vehicle. Well, now we have a little bit more information about it, and Tesla has filed patents for this unboxed assembly method, which reveal more of that information. In that patent, the automaker writes, a modular vehicle architecture for efficiently assembling vehicles. The modular vehicle architecture includes preparing a plurality of individual section of a vehicle in a plurality of sub-assembly lines prior to forming a full body of the vehicle. The vehicle architecture further includes joining the plurality of individual sections of the vehicle in a main line. The full body frame of the vehicle can include a front side, a rear side, a top side, a bottom side, a left side, and a right side. And if that's the kind of thing that you want to write about, maybe a career in patent law is for you. Now, while Tesla might not be building a $25,000 EV, they are trying to make the Model 3 and Model Y more affordable. Another company that's trying to build more affordable EVs is Kia, and their low-cost EV3 is about to get even better with new variants on the way with all-wheel drive and GT trim levels. After opening orders this summer in Korea with prices starting at just $30,700, Kia's new electric SUV racked up more than 10,000 reservations in its first 23 days. With incentives, Kia said the EV3 could be had for under $30,000. Last month, Kia opened EV3 orders in the UK starting at $42,300. Kia called it the brand's most affordable EV yet. Like in Korea, the EV3 is offered in four trims in the UK: Air Standard Range, Air Long Range, GT Line, and GT Line S. Based on Hyundai's EGMP platform with advanced new technology, the EV3 gets up to 372 miles in the WLTP driving range. In Korea, it's rated with 311 miles, and the EPA is expected to fall somewhere in between. Now, we started off today with news about energy, news about sustainability, news about the grid, so we're not going to close it out that way. If you like what you heard, be sure to like and subscribe. If you didn't like me making fun of Trump and Elon, boy, are you in the wrong place, man. But terrible news for you guys. This is, in fact, the only show on the internet, so you're stuck with it. Be sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss anything to complain about.